Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
It's time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning, Jill.
And just randomly, I was speaking to someone. I said something about, my dog, and she said, do you know, there's just this wonderful place. It's the Billerton Veterinary Practice. She said, I can't recommend them highly enough.
Thank you. So that's wonderful. Yeah, I thank that person.
I thought that was pretty cool. I said, I know, but that's okay. All right. Finn and St. Clair in Great Barrington. Our cat always used to have kind of stinky breath, but lately we're noticing that not only has the problem gone away, but her breath smells really sweet, almost fruity. What did we do right? Stella's about 7 years old, spayed, a little chubster, indoor cat, 100% love bug.
Well, the first thing I would ask is, are there other symptoms, other changes that have been noticed? Change in breath can be significant. Sweet breath can be ketosis, which is, you know, diabetes potentially, hepatic lipidosis, which is fatty liver syndrome. So I think that my first question would be, has the kitty changed its thirst? So if we have a thirsty kitty who's a little bit of a chubster, then I worry about diabetes. And so I think the breath can be coming from the whole animal, not necessarily just from the mouth. I would definitely have her checked out.
Yeah, I think I just, not being a vet, but being, I always sort of reflect back on my civilian days, which is always, and learning way back, you know, just being thrilled that someone had sweet breath and finding out that, you know, that's not actually a good thing. Or it can potentially not be a good thing, and that's worth checking. So it's always...
It's worth checking. There's a lot, there's a lot.
It's just always...
Potentially a lot more to this story.
Exactly.
It's unusual, it would be unusual for tartar to sort of clean up unless you've done something quite a bit different to help the oral health.
Exactly. It's just so I just, all I'm saying is I remember, whatever it turns out to be, I remember learning a long time ago that that's one of the things that doesn't necessarily cure itself. So, like, you check it out because that's just an oddity.
Yeah, it's a great question, though.
Yep. All right, Dawn in Myers Corner, if my dog eats grass and then chucks it back up, does that mean I should stop her from eating it or let her do it because she's trying to get something out of her system?
If your dog's eating grass and vomiting on a regular basis, then there's something going on, usually some discomfort in the stomach, although sometimes it can be lower down too. Dogs will just graze on grass, and my dogs love it, but they don't vomit it. They're just eating small amounts, and they don't vomit it. Typically, if your dog's eating a lot of grass, it usually means that they have gastritis, which means inflammation in the stomach. And there can be lots and lots of reasons for that. So if there's vomiting, I would not allow her to do it for now and get it checked out. There can be other symptoms that your vet would ask you about, such as burping, a lot of burping if there's gurgly tummy, which we call a borborygmus, which I've used on the show before. I love that word. And swallowing, difficulty swallowing, or just pronounced swallowing sometimes can mean gastroesophageal reflux, where the acid is coming up into the esophagus. And dogs will eat grass sometimes just to put the fire out, you know,
the
discomfort.
Also the carpet. But I have a question because of one of the Labradoris. The late lamented Labradoris was famous. Somebody always said, and then I had to pull a grass skirt out of her. And, you know, I have had grass-eating dogs that have a great time, but, you know, how is there any way to move it through any day? You know, because sometimes you got to pull it out, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, well, yes. Yeah, so it can cause trouble. They'll swallow long pieces of grass, and so it doesn't digest. And it comes out in the poop, and, yeah, there's a piece sticking out. And you can do that with grass, because grass is limited in length, but be careful doing that with anything else.
Right. No, I understand, but she was like, and another grass skirt from Stella.
Right.
A luau.
Yeah. Thanks for that story.
You're welcome. I just hope that we run this show early enough in the morning for people to focus on the fact that that happens all the time. All right, Chris in Millerton, the test results from my cat's last vet visit came back, and they are saying he has Cushing's disease. I'm totally confused because I thought only dogs got that, and according to stuff I'm reading online, it looks super dire for dogs. I can't get in to see the vet again for another few weeks, so I'd appreciate anything you can explain about this.
We've got to make this into a show that I can ask questions, because I have so many questions. I can say that Cushing's disease, let me start with this. Cushing's disease is a problem with the adrenal glands. It's hyperadrenocorticism. So that means that the adrenal glands, which are these two very tiny, especially in a cat, tiny glands that sit near the kidneys, and they produce too much cortisone. For a couple of potential reasons, but that's what happens. And in cats, it is a less common diagnosis in cats, and it tends to be actually more severe and more difficult to treat. The most common symptom is drinking a lot of water, urinating a lot, and having a big appetite. So those symptoms are the same in dogs and cats. So if your cat has those symptoms, that's probably why they checked her. It's also very commonly associated with diabetes in cats. So if you've got a cat with those drinking a lot of water but not necessarily diabetic, which can be tested with blood work, then it certainly is a possibility to have Cushing's disease. These cats tend to look a bit pot-bellied. They might have a very thin coat or alopecia, hair loss, and they tend to have very thin skin. So sometimes it's just diagnosed based on a cat's skin tearing. It's so thin. Now, that may be an advanced disease, but unfortunately it's not often diagnosed until it's more advanced. So what I can say is if your cat's not drinking a lot of water and urinating a lot, then it would be somewhat unlikely. It's usually treated, if there's a definitive diagnosis, it's usually treated with trilistane, which is the same drug we treat dogs, one of the drugs we treat dogs with. It can be due to a tumor on the adrenal glands, so you want to make sure that you get an abdominal ultrasound done to make sure that there's no tumor there, because the trilistone won't work as well if there is, and typically you need to have that adrenal gland removed. So lots of questions, because it is a confusing diagnosis.
Is it anything that can be, and I want to ask two questions. My question is anything that can be treated homeopathically or not? And my second question is, I think that it's great that some of these questions are eliciting questions on your part, because people need to know what to look for. And I think that, we live in a place now where if they state one thing, like, they don't get where it fits into the whole context. So, like, when you
right,
do have a question,
right,
if you want to say this is, that would be, I think, pretty informative. It's like, oh, should I look for this, that, or the other?
Yeah, and I would guess that the veterinarian tested because this kitty has, a lot of water drinking and probably doesn't have diabetes. Otherwise, it would have been mentioned here. And so the veterinarian's trying to maybe catch this disease before you get all of those awful other symptoms, in which case it may be more treatable. Once your skin is tearing because it's so thin, it's difficult to turn that situation around.
I'm sorry to interject. Observationally, would you not be able to see some of that happening or not?
If it's early on, you might not, in which case the veterinarian might choose not to treat and just wait and make sure that... So there's a test called a low-dose dexamethasone suppression test that should have been done. And so, of course, that would have been done, I'm sure, and been abnormal. And if the cat, if the kitty's symptoms are not dire, then, you know, you might even wait a 6 months and do it again to see if it, it is repeatable. Because the trilistane, the drug that is used to treat, has to be monitored very closely, because you don't want to affect all the cells of the adrenal glands. You would just want, with trilistane, you want to just suppress some of them so that the adrenal glands don't produce as much cortisone. If the pituitary gland in the brain, so the most common form of this disease is called pituitary-dependent hyperadrenal corticism. The term Cushing's comes from the human medicine. And if, in fact, the pituitary gland is producing too much of a hormone that stimulates the adrenal glands, then both of those glands will be big and overproducing cortisone. If there's a tumor, just one of them will be big and overproducing. So that actually can be taken care of with surgery. However, I think 80 to 85% of the time, it's the pituitary dependent in dogs and cats. So that means medication. And so you want to be right about your diagnosis before you go for the medication. So getting an ultrasound to make sure that those adrenals should be a little bit enlarged, at least a little bit enlarged. And if they're not significantly enlarged, then perhaps wait a while before you start treatment and, watch for furthering symptoms. Make sure it's not some other disease.
All righty. Nikita in Hartford, my Jack Russell Millie is scratching and licking between her toes constantly. I don't see anything there, but she won't leave them alone.
There's a lot of that going around. There's scratching and licking between the toes is usually a sign of allergies. It can be potentially environmental inhaled allergens, but it also more likely would be allergens and pollens that are being picked up on the feet. Could potentially be food allergy as well, but it's pretty common symptom of allergies, facial and feet itchiness. It also can mean that she has a dermatitis between the toes, so I'm assuming that maybe Nikita has checked that out. There can be dermatitis or skin inflammation between the toes if those feet are staying wet all the time, and potential yeast infection there.
And what does it look like? Is it just gooey, a little red, or
the yeast infection? So the skin would look wet, look damp, and red, but it probably would look that way either way. And you can get yeast secondary to the fact that she's licking a lot because her feet itch because it's allergy. So, typically, I might try to correct the dermatitis first and see if the itch goes away. And if it doesn't, then we're talking about allergies, and then we need to think about what can we do to prevent the situation from getting worse once it's healed up, which means rinsing those feet every time your pup comes inside is one thing that you can do to help. And then rinse them off and then dry them really well.
Right. And you got to dry between the little nooks and crannies. One of the things that this is a real civilian question that I've just never gotten a successful answer to because I project. But I have known people who say, yeah, it was itchy and gooey, so I put something like bacitracin on it or something.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can think of is, wow, more goo on top of goo. Do you have, am I wrong?
Yeah, and it could be partially bacterial, but you may not be getting to the source of the problem, and you're also going to be picking up everything, outside. And then if they don't lick it off right away, which is usually what happens. So when we medicate, when I medicate, I usually use something either dry or in the spray liquid form. When the feet are dry, dab it on, and then you're going to do that, just before you're entertaining your dog a little bit, if there's nothing gooey happening there, then they're less likely to itch, or right. you may even need to apply one of those Elizabethan collars, God forbid, for a couple of days to keep them from licking.
Yeah. No, definitely dogs lick it. I just, you know, I think that's almost a beginner's. You know, it happens in your if you're new to the pet doggy game. It's you're going to have a summer when that happens, and it's going. You know, you're suddenly going to know what to do.
Yeah, and this summer is the worst for all of the rain rot type of skin problems. The poor dogs are just wet all the time. You know, they're wet in the grass in the morning, and they're wet when it rains, and they're wet when they're swimming, and it's just you know, it's a difficult thing sometimes to keep them dry enough to have healthy skin.
And no matter how hard you dry it, I was thinking about this at the weekend. No matter how assiduously. At least in my house, when you try to dry your dog, there's always, it's just never dry enough.
Right, right. And then they don't dry out unless
right.
you're in air conditioning all the
right.
time
exactly.
and that kind of thing.
All right. The Van Oss family in Pittsfield, our pregnant Gordon Setter bitch was diagnosed with preeclampsia, and our vet wants to put her on oral calcium supplements. However, a family friend who had a vet practice back in the 70s says he wouldn't do it because of risks to her parathyroid gland. We are feeling like we're between a rock and a hard place and are wondering if you have an opinion one way or the other.
I do. So preeclampsia is usually happens after the puppies are born or after, I think, a baby is born in humans. And it is a lowered calcium level. And oftentimes it's due to the sudden need to produce a lot of milk. Especially in small breed dogs with lots of puppies, they need to mobilize a whole lot of calcium all at once, and the parathyroid gland might not be up to that for whatever reason, stress, poor diet prior to whelping, etc. But the absolute contraindication would be to supplement with calcium during pregnancy. Because if you're supplementing with oral calcium during pregnancy, there's a feedback system that would suppress the ability of the parathyroid gland to mobilize calcium when it's needed. So that's going to make your eclampsia that much worse when there's a need for more. So it's unusual for it to happen during pregnancy, but it can happen, and I think maybe it has to do with the mom trying to mobilize enough calcium to harden and calcify those bones in all those puppies. To tell you the truth, I don't really know what is done about preeclampsia if it's really severe, but definitely not oral calcium supplementation. So you need to get another opinion about that.
Okay.
Well, there's two opinions.
I was just thinking that. No, but you need a rubber opinion. You need another.
With somebody who kind of specializes in that kind of thing, in neonatal care,
right.
You know, maybe a specialty clinic, an internal medicine specialist. You want to be able to adjust the diet in other ways to support the mom without supplementing with oral calcium, and it depends on how low that calcium is. So it's called tetany, puerperal tetany in dogs. Not so easy to say. And, you know, it can really cause some severe symptoms of muscle tremors. Early on, you'll see salivation and some stiffness and wobbliness and, you know, all the things that you see in cows with milk fever, same thing. It can be really serious and requires hospitalization when it happens after the puppies are born. So it's a very serious situation that you want to investigate. Unusual in a Gordon Setter, maybe she's carrying a lot of puppies.
Right, and so they're therefore worth again checking into for a lot of reasons, but mostly because you need someone who knows how to balance. Knows how to balance these things and has had a lot of has had more experience than obviously the regular vet. All right, last question. I believe Anna in Bristol. Help! My cat's throwing up her water right after she drinks.
Oh, she's Probably drinking too much water, or maybe the water's too cold, or so she's not throwing up her food, but just the water. You know, these are the times that I've seen when cats are over drinking water. So they're so thirsty that they drink a whole lot at one time and vomit. If there was dry food in there and it mixed with the food and the belly expanded and caused vomiting, then you'd see the food. So I would get that water drinking investigated for all kinds of reasons, some of which we've discussed.
All right. And also, I think at some point we should revisit, just because it's relevant and most people aren't focused on it, especially from a convenience standpoint. We should revisit cat food and dry versus wet. I know it's got to be probably the most conversation that you can have in your sleep, but it's relevant, and I think there's a whole new generation that needs to be aware of that. In addition to, I'm just making sort of mental notes. In addition to, if food is formulated for your pet specifically, you definitely need a nutritionist involved in that. And there are a lot of boutique places that may not have as much focus that as you need. And I've encountered a fair bit of that in the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree.
That's just something that we need to get the vet to say, not the civilian.
Yeah.
Anyway. Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon. As always, this has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who?